All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio. You're on WHPC 90.3 FM, broadcasting out of Garden City, New York, from Nassau Community College, here every Wednesday and Friday at 5. With me, of course, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales.
Where else would I be?
Yeah, right. Glad you made it.
Sorry. I got sidetracked on a YouTube video.
Well, as you know, it being Friday, we're going to be covering Motown, which we've been doing now for just about a year. It's hard to believe that we are now starting the second half of 100 shows. That looks like the implication. This is show number 51. We have been playing, in order to convey what Motown is and what the label is about, we have been literally playing every A-side released by the label.
You're going to have to censor yourself. I don't know.
Since their inception. Well, now we got this far, we can keep going. I mean, we've covered 12 years so far, pretty much.
Luckily,
just
there's
about 12
a lot
years.
Of different bands, so it's not like it's just one musician.
A lot of variety and a lot of history. We're hearing exactly how a label like Motown really works. And I think that this is bound to be hopefully interesting. Certainly should be an informational for our listeners.
Yes.
And in the meanwhile, we get to play a lot of great music that you're familiar with and a lot of stuff that you might not know at all. And you're going to hear a lot of great sleeper songs along with a couple of, you know, bum notes.
A couple of duds.
Yeah, what you going to do? But our show today takes us into 1970, a new decade. So we do know that we're getting near the end of our coverage for Motown because we're only going to do this until up to the point where the label moves to Los Angeles, which is where they sort of lost their significance
and
they were
relevance.
Right. They were no longer the leader of the pack. They still had some great songs. We might do like a summation of some of that, but we're going to continue playing every A-side until that point. So we got about 2 more years to go.
What happens after that?
After that, we go back to something ancient. We're going to go. I know what I'm going to be doing next. I'm going to be covering Louis Armstrong.
Nice.
Oh. Is that ancient?
Well, it could be for some. It may as well be. It's almost 100 years old, some of that stuff. It's 80 years where we're going to be beginning at that point. So that's old stuff. So I'm looking forward to that because he's one of my favorites. But meanwhile, we've got Motown in 1970 to focus on. And like I said, some known, some not known. We're going to start with a hit. Now, check this out. We've been talking about this for a while. Norman Whitfield took over the reins for the Temptations back in May of 1966 with Ain't Too Proud to Beg. That was his first production with them. And that was the gig that he more or less got him the job over Smokey Robinson back then. We covered that then. Well, since then, he produced all but one of the singles released by the Temptations, and every single one of them was a hit. Everyone. It was Motown's longest hit streak ever, even beating Holland Dozier Holland and the Supremes.
Wow.
If you can imagine it. If you check this out, going all the way back to Ain't Too Proud to Beg, the songs that were produced by Norman Whitfield since then include Beauty Is Only Skin Deep, I Know I'm Losing You, All I Need, You're My Everything, I Wish It Would Rain, Cloud Nine, and Runaway Child, Running Wild. My God, it was... Don't Let the Joneses Get You Down, I Can't Get Next to You, and now this track, another in a series of their topical songs, The Temptations with Psychedelic Shack.
Take a look at your man. You'd be surprised what you might find. Yeah. Yeah.
watch and tow. You can learn the meaning of soul.
There ain't no such a thing as time.
You, this place will blow your mind.
They got music so high, you can't get over it.
So low, you can't get under
it. Out around the corner, oh yeah, just lost track.
People are talking about the psychedelic shack. Your sound
check, that's where it's at. Psychedelic shack, that's where it's at. Psychedelic shack, that's where it's at.
Do that thing. You might see anybody there. Yeah, yeah.
Baskin' Rocks, tails and me.
Ooh, don't really matter what you wear.
Oh, you can dig off your shoe.
Huh? Sit on the floor.
Join in and be what you wanna be. Sight and poetry.
Ooh,
yeah.
Screaming guitars and a thousand color lights. People, I'm telling you, this place is really out of sight.
Yeah. Yeah. You can have your fortune told. You can learn the meaning of soul. I can tell you this place will blow your mind. Don't you know it's
right around the corner.
Oh, yeah.
True Motown fashion, a fade out, but a slower one than usual. It takes a little bit longer. Now they're in 1970. They take a little bit longer to hit those faders, don't they? That's the Temptations with Psychedelic Shack. My God, probably a good dozen top 20 hits in a row produced by Norman Whitfield for that band. It was a record for the label. That song was also named for a real place. There was a bar called, well, a nightclub called Maverick's Flat in Los Angeles that they had gone to, and they said, wow, this place is something else. This is like a real psychedelic shack. And somebody said, wow, that's cool. Let's write a song. And it was that simple. That's what inspired it.
That's cool.
Another hit up next. The band, remember the band The Originals? We've been talking about them back and forth. Actually, in the beginning, we were kind of like mocking them because they said they weren't particularly original.
Right.
They finally got it right. After years of waiting, they recorded that song Baby I'm For Real, which was the flip side, which became a huge hit, an album
right.
track, actually.
Yeah, the DJs liked it, right?
Right. And that was their breakthrough in the summer of 69. We played that a few shows ago. Well, this is their follow-up to that hit. Also, like that song, produced and co-written by Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye had a knack of producing these guys. He seemed to really relate to them because Marvin himself, with his roots being in doo-wop, he kind of had a good idea about what to do with how to get these voices. He had a good sense for it. So the band guys give him a lot of credit for the vocal arrangement on this track. And the result is yet another hit for the Originals. This time, number 12 on the pop charts, number 4 on the R&B charts. Here they are singing The Bells.
What do I have to do? true love and joy and faith and all my strength I'll give to you, darling. My love is yours exclusively to enjoy any way you want to.
You can hear a touch of Marvin Gaye in that. You can hear that that was his touch in the writing. For, I can anyway.
Yeah, there's
in the
like
melody.
Phrasing.
Yeah, it just feels like this. Because he did exactly that. He would go in and he'd come up with ideas, and the band would be like, you know, there's no way that's going to work. That sounds ridiculous. Then he'd go in and he'd show them what he meant. He'd physically do it. They're like, wow, that works great.
Right.
So they were really impressed with this with what Marvin Gaye brought to the table. And
he
like
knew
I said,
what he was talking about.
He really
and
did.
He knew how to. He could sing it.
So this is where Marvin was beginning to get his own independence here now. He always had an independent streak. He always wanted
right.
to do things his way. Well, now he's learning how to produce for himself, too. So this would end up being relevant later on as
Uh-oh.
We get a little bit deeper into our Motown
Make
shows.
Make a note of that for the pop quiz.
That's right. Exactly. Next up is an artist that we covered a couple of weeks back, Joe Harnell. He was one of those guys on the Chisa label, I believe. He was also the music director for Mike Douglas on his daytime TV talk show. Had a five-day-a-week gig working for Mike Douglas and, you know, playing, being responsible for the music backup for those, for the guests on the show. Well, this track was pulled from the same session as his previous single, and this is also his last from Motown. Just him doing an instrumental version of a song that was a hit for Stevie Wonder, Joe Harnell, with his version of My Cherie Amour. sort of an elevator music version of the song by Stevie Wonder.
Did it chart?
No, not at all.
No.
Really, nothing on Chisa did up to this point. Next song we would have been playing would have been a chart hit. Remember we played a couple weeks back, we played Never Had a Dream Come True by Stevie Wonder. And we played it, then we said, oh, but you know what? That was knocked off of the A side and replaced by Yester You, Yesterday. Well, right here is where Never Had a Dream Come True would normally have fit in as it was released. But since we already played it, we don't need
to revisit
it. We can move right past it.
Wow. That shows growth on our part. By our part, I mean your part.
Well, I don't want to repeat songs we've already
It's
played.
A no-repeat policy.
Exactly right.
Okay.
So the next track up is by Terry Johnson, who is another artist that we also heard from recently. He was the ex-Flamingo lead vocalist who came to Motown. Well, the track that we played last time ended up not being released. He recorded it, and they ended up holding back on it. This actually was released. This is his first Motown single that actually was released to the public. A pretty good one, too, but there was no chart action this time for Terry Johnson, unfortunately. Name of the track is Whatcha Gonna Do. Terry Johnson, a man who is probably more well-known because of his affiliation with his previous band, the Flamingos, than he is as a solo artist, especially with his stint at Motown. But that was a good track. This is good. That's an example of one of those sleeper tracks that are there, you know, pretty much under the floorboards, so to speak, that you can dig up when you do a show like this, covering every one of the A-sides released by Motown Records. You know the next artist, Heidi, Edwin Starr.
Okay.
At this point,
we haven't heard from him in a little while, though, right?
Well, yeah. Well, actually, you haven't heard too much in the way of it, of things that were successful for him. Since he came to Motown, he had really one hit up to this point, which was 25 Miles.
Okay.
A lot of releases. And now he's struggling once again to see if he can get back onto the chart again after 25 Miles. And they did an unusual thing here. He is not only the performer of this song, he's also the songwriter and the producer.
Oh, wow.
So he's like, it's the, you know, he's basically firing on all three cylinders, so to speak, yes. with this. It's the trifecta, which was a very, very rare thing for Motown. As you know, everything there was about using the team. You got a songwriting team, you got different players, you got different writers,
right,
you got producers. You don't do everything. But here he actually was. And now this also, as we had spoken earlier about Marvin Gaye learning to get his own, you know, sea legs as far as becoming a producer. Well, here's Edwin Starr sort of establishing a precedent for what Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder would eventually start doing for the label. Unfortunately, it wasn't a big hit for Edwin Starr. It stalled at number 117 on the pop charts and number 39 on the R&B charts. Still, it was like a one-man show for him on this track. Edwin Starr performing Time. Edwin Starr. That track goes a long way toward conveying just how much Motown had changed.
Yeah, that was a hot number.
It's a great song, but for some reason, you know, not working for him on the pop charts. But that's a sound that Motown wouldn't have been able to go near 4 or 5 years ago. It just wouldn't have been possible.
It wasn't happening.
But they let that the funky thing creep in around 1969, and now there's no looking back. So you can see how the label has fundamentally changed. Another artist who changed a lot in the opposite direction, strangely enough, was Junior Walker and the All-Stars. We had mentioned, of course.
Yeah, he only wanted to do instrumentals mostly.
Exactly. All like, you know, bacon, fat, and grease, man. That's what he was about, you know, doing the nightclub thing and playing roadhouses. But, you know, he just had that one that one mellow hit with What Does It Take? And that's what everybody started bringing to him. And he was trying to fight it for the longest time. And in fact, he even talks about it a little bit. I should read this if I could find it. I thought I had it right here.
You should have had it together, hon.
I did, but you know, I wrote down the wrong page. Let's see if I could find it. Here it is. These are his words. He says, "I said I couldn't do those slow songs. I really didn't want to do them," Walker once said. "After I got into it, I stopped saying what I couldn't do. I turned down Someday We'll Be Together. I should have cut that record. It's true.
In true Motown fashion, you can always go back and do it.
That's true, but that was offered to him first before the Supremes, and it's obviously there was no chance of somebody else owning that song after Diana Ross and the Supremes did it. So Junior
Done
Walker
deal.
And the All-Stars had to move on. However, he really can't complain, because this track marks the third of four consecutive top three R&B hits for Junior Walker. Then they do allow him to blow his sax on the intro of the song for at least a full minute. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds for the guy. So this is actually number two R&B hit, number 21 pop hit. Here's Junior Walker and the All-Stars with Gotta Hold On to This Feeling. Was a hit for Junior Walker and the All-Stars. Mellow song. It seems like it's nearly forgotten today, and yet, you know, like I said, number two on the R&B charts.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I am too. I am very surprised, because it's a great song. Deserved to be a hit, and it was.
Good for him.
Unfortunately, things weren't that working that way for Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. They were sort of going in the same direction around this time as the Marvelettes, which is to say away from the spotlight rather than toward it. It's like, you know, the bloom is off the rose, unfortunately. And they just really weren't taking to this new funky thing that was happening at the label. This
or
song,
maybe
however,
the label wasn't handing them anything.
Yeah, or giving them the support that they needed. Because this is a fairly contemporary song we're about to play. In fact, it was a protest song, and a pretty powerful protest song, considering that it's coming out of Motown.
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking. Now, Martha Reeves had lost a brother in Vietnam. Her brother had died. So here she is singing a song called I Should Be Proud, which is ultimately a protest song about the war. But Reeves believes that there was government pressure to crush the song. She thought that she found some evidence that the government was actually trying to prevent this song from being an AM radio hit. Well, whatever the reason, the song saw no chart action at all, unfortunately. But it was released, so here's Martha Reeves and the Vandellas singing I Should Be Proud.
I was under the dryer when the telegram came. Private John C. Miller was shot down.
Martha Reeves, who may have been robbed of a hit due to some outside intervention. We don't really know, but whatever it is, it might have even affected Berry Gordy's decision as far as promoting it, because he really didn't really want to create too many waves, which is why this next song is a real surprise, too. It was actually released the exact same day as the Martha Reeves track that we just heard. So two controversial songs coming out of the same day out of Motown. There must have been, Berry Gordy must have just had like a brain glitch or something. Because it's just totally unusual for the label and for Berry Gordy to let this happen. This song is actually a cover of a song that was originally recorded by Norman Whitfield with the Temptations as an album track. It's another sort of a protest song. This time the lead singer of the group, but the group is the Spinners, actually. I should have mentioned that.
Yeah.
The lead singer was G.C. Cameron, who was actually a Vietnam vet. So for him to be singing this song, maybe he had his own way of putting an edge on it. So for him, the words meant something, but it was another song that Motown was not going to promote under any circumstances. It might even sound a little strange today. Here's the Spinners singing Message from a Black Man.
Ha ha ha. Yes, my skin is black, but that's no reason to hold me back.
That's unusual for the Spinners. Message from a Black Man. Obviously a song, not a hit. Probably not promoted by the label.
No.
Can't say that for the next artist, although this song, there's a little bit of a story here. The Supremes, who are now the Supremes again, as opposed to being Diana Ross and the Supremes.
How did that happen?
There's this whole rollout thing that they had to do. They're trying to basically promote Diana Ross as a solo star. We'll get to that next week, I believe. You know, we'll have a, pay a little bit more attention to Diana's soul career and what the label was trying to do.
Diana Washington? Just kidding.
But from my Wednesday gaffe?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, well, at this point, since Diana is out of the group, they need to figure out what they're going to do to get a different lead singer. They had made their farewell appearance in Las Vegas on January 14th, 1970. It was a big, you know, fanfare and, you know, very emotional, although probably it was all crocodile tears all around, as you know, with Diana being totally happy to be able to going off on her own. The original replacement was supposed to be Sarita Wright.
Oh, yeah. Now, Stevie Wonder's not soon, quite yet. Yeah,
exactly.
Wife.
Soon to be Stevie Wonder's first wife. But she had recorded a number of things, had a great voice, would have been perfect for the role. But basically, fate intervenes. What happened was Berry Gordy and the Supremes' manager, Shelley Berger, were in Miami Beach. And they stopped in to see, of all things, they wanted to see the boxer, Ernie Terrell, who was now in a band. And he had a backup group with him. They were called Ernie Terrell and the Heavyweights. And Ernie Terrell had a sister named Jean Terrell, who was the lead singer in the Heavyweights. Well, Shelley Berger and Berry Gordy were kind of blown away. They're like, that's what they should be, the Supremes.
Oh.
With absolutely no respect whatsoever for Mary Wells or Cindy Birdsong, who, by the way, were Supremes in name, but as we know, they weren't even singing on their records as of late anyway.
They were persona non grata.
There were faces on the album covers.
Yeah.
Pretty much at this point. Or they'd tour. but they only occasionally would even record with the band. It's just the way that it was. So they figure that they approached Jean about doing some recordings, and she was totally fine with it. So before, you know, without a really much happening, they decided to start recording with Jean. Here's the first song that they were going to release with Jean Torello, a song called Life Beats. All right, now that's the Supremes singing Life Beats. That was scheduled to be the A side. Now, here's the story, which would happen with this. As I said, they had seen Jean Torell singing with the boxer, Ernie Torell. And so Jean Torell was introduced to the world sort of near the end of the Supremes, like very end, at the end of their final set. And television impresario Ed Sullivan sent a widely quoted telegram which stated, "Tonight, one of the greatest attractions of the 60s becomes two of the greatest attractions of the 70s. And then Berry Gordy changes his mind. "I don't want Jean Torell to be the lead singer of the Temptations," he said, "of the Supremes," he says. I want to replace her with Syreeta Wright. Go back to the original plan." So he tells this to Mary Wilson. Mary Wilson is shocked, and I don't know why. I don't know what the personal aspect was involved, but Mary stops, looks at Berry and says, "No." Flat out refuses. So Berry Gordy says, "Okay, you're going to be difficult. Then I wash my hands of the group." Totally decides he's going to walk away from the Supremes. Meanwhile, they decided to replace the A side with the track we just heard with this song. And despite Berry Gordy's, you know, rather dire, you know, statement about how he was going to abandon the group entirely, right, it managed to get a hit anyway. In fact, a pretty decent size hit. Number 10 on the pop charts, number 5 on the R&B. The first hit for the group without Diana Ross Here they are singing Up the Ladder to the Roof.
Come with me. The night. Oh,
ah,
we try and guide you to better times and brighter days. Don't be afraid.
Climb up the ladder to the roof where we can see heaven much better. Climb up the ladder to the roof where we can be.
There's another hit for Diana. Well, excuse me, not Diana
not
Ross,
Diana
but
Ross.
The Supremes. Actually, they on that show with Ed Sullivan, on the Ed Sullivan show, he introduces the band and he introduces Cindy Birdsong as Cindy Birdstone.
Oopsie.
Typical Ed Sullivan boy. That guy was incredible. Amazing he had a TV show when you think about it. He's worse than me with names. All right, but the Chisa label. No hits on this label. But it
not
did
yet.
They did have some interesting things going on. It was a very diverse label, if nothing else. This is another release from that label. It is Stu Gardner's second release. Check this out. He almost sounds like James Brown on this track. Stu Gardner singing Expressin' My Love.
Yeah! I'm expressing my love for your time. Yeah!
No, that is not James Brown. Sure sounds like him. That's Stu Gardner.
Hold me.
Singing Expressing My Love. Okay, we mentioned last week that Motown had a new imprint called Rare Earth, and there was a group that came that was actually providing the name for the new label, Rare Earth. Well, that single that we played at the time called Generation was a total bomb. Nothing happened with that at all, so there was a little bit of concern. So they're in the studio recording for their album. They're literally doing their live show. They're jamming, pretty much, trying to come up with material. And one of the songs that they were recording was their version of Get Ready, the old Temptations hit. Mm-hmm. Well, they're laying it down in the studio, and they end up with a keeper version that's 21 minutes long. An entire side filling,
now.
21 minutes. No, we're not going to play that. What they did, though, was they took the 21-minute version, which was getting a lot of attention because it was a cool thing for Motown to be doing, and they edited it down to 3 and change, and it reached number 4 on the pop charts, number 20 on the R&B charts in that form. Here's the first hit for the group Rare Earth, their version of Get Ready. There's Rare Earth now coming up, the whole new phase of Motown with that. We've got time for one more track, and it's a biggie, a real biggie. In fact, we just had what some people consider to be the best debut record of all time was the Jackson 5, their version of I Want You Back.
Yes.
That was a few weeks ago when we played that. How do you follow up a debut like that? What can you possibly do?
Motown was another Jackson 5 song.
Pretty much. They were racking their brains. And one thing that the songwriter said that they learned was how to approach a song from Holland, Doja Holland, where they would always steal ideas from their own songs.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, that's what we got to do. Somewhere in I Want You Back is a key for the next song. And they found chord changes in the chorus that they said, that's going to be it. We got to use those chords and we'll write a whole new song around those chords in the chorus. So they did, and they wanted to keep the theme as simple as possible. So like, okay, what can it be? A, B, C, 1, 2, 3.
And that's what it is.
And they're like, okay, that's it. Let's do that. That's really dumb simple. They ended up, of course, with the song that Berry Gordy wanted to call it, 1, 2, 3, when Barry already had that title about 5 years ago. So they stuck with the ABC title, sold 500,000 copies in its first week, the biggest out-of-the-gate hit for Motown ever. It was the song that knocked Let It Be out of the number one spot. Here's the Jackson 5 with ABC. Take care, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.
I'm gonna teach you how to sing it out.
Come on, come on, come on, let me show you what it's all about.